Chapter 133. And do wish to speak to her, pray walk up. Pray walk up, Miss Pinch. Don't stand here. Apostrophe, Tom still hesitated for he felt that he was in an awkward position. But Cherry passing him at this juncture, and leading his sister upstairs, and the house door being at the same time shut behind them, he followed without quite knowing whether it was well or ill-judged so to do. Mary, my darling, ... said the fair Miss Pecksniff, opening the door of the usual sitting room. Here are Mr. Pinch and his sister come to see you. I thought we should find you here, Mrs. Todgers. How do you do, Mrs. Camp? And how do you do, Mr. Chuffy? Though it's of no use asking you the question, I am well aware. ... Honoring each of these parties, as she severally addressed them, with an acid smile, Miss Charity presented Mr. Model. ... I believe you have seen him before, ... she pleasantly observed. Augustus, my sweet child, bring me a chair. ... The sweet child did as he was told, and was then about to retire into a corner to mourn in secret, when Miss Charity, calling him in an audible whisper a little pet, ... gave him leave to come and sit beside her. It is to be hoped, for the general cheerfulness of mankind, that such a doleful little pet was never seen as Mr. Model looked when he complied. So despondent was his temper, that he showed no outward thrill of ecstasy, when Miss Pecksniff placed her lily hand in his, and concealed this mark of her favor from the vulgar gaze, by covering it with a corner of her shawl. Indeed, he was infinitely more rueful then than he had been before, and, sitting uncomfortably upright in his chair, surveyed the company with watery eyes, which seemed to say, without the aid of language, "Oh, good gracious! Look here! Won't some kind Christian help me?" ... But the ecstasies of Mrs. Camp were sufficient to have furnished forth a score of young lovers, and they were chiefly awakened by the sight of Tom Pinch and his sister. Mrs. Camp was a lady of that happy temperament which can be ecstatic without any other stimulating cause than a general desire to establish a large and profitable connection. She added daily so many strings to her bow that she made a perfect harp of it, and upon that instrument she now began to perform an extemporaneous concerto. "Why, goodness me! ... she said, Mrs. Chuzzlewit. To think as I should see beneath this blessed house, which well I know it, Miss Pecksniff, my sweet young lady, to be a house as there is not a many like, worse luck, and wishing it were not so, which then this tearful Wally would be changed into a flower and guardian, Mr. Chuffy, to think as I should see beneath this individual roof, identically common, Mr. Pinch, I take the liberty, though almost unbeckoning, and do assure you of it, sir, the smilingest and sweetest face as ever, Mrs. Chuzzlewit, I see exceptin' yourn, my dear good lady, and your good ladies too, sir, Mr. Model, if I may make so bold as speak so plain, of what is plain enough to them as needn't look through millstones, Mrs. Todgers, to find out what is wrote upon the wall behind. Which no offense is meant, ladies and gentlemen. None being took, I hope. To think as I should see that smilingest and sweetest face which me, and another friend of mine, took notice of among the packages down London Bridge, in this promiscuous place, is a surprise indeed. ... Having contrived, in this happy manner, to invest every member of her audience with an individual share, and immediate personal interest in her address, Mrs. Camp dropped several curtsies to Ruth, unsmilingly shaking her head a great many times, pursued the thread of her discourse. "Now, ain't we rich in beauty this here joyful arternoon, I'm sure? I knows a lady, which her name, I'll not deceive you, Mrs. Chuzzlewit, is heiress, Her husband's brother being 6'3", and marked with a Mad Bull in Wellington boots upon his left arm, on account of his precious mother having been worded by one into a shoemaker's shop, when in a situation which blesses the man as his quiver full of such, as many times I've said to Gamp, when words as roach betwixt us on account of the expense, and often have I said to Mrs. Harris, "Oh, Mrs. Harris, ma'am, your countenance is quite a angel's. Which, but for pimples, it would be." "No, sorry Gamp," says she, "you best of hard-working and industrious creatures as ever was underpaid at any price, which underpaid you are, quite different. Harris had it done afore marriage at 10 and 6, she says, and wore it faithful next his heart till the color run, when the money was declined to be give back, and no arrangement could be come to. But he never said it was a angel's, sorry, whatever he might have thought. If Mrs. Harris's husband was here now," apostrophe said Mrs. Gamp, looking round, and chuckling as she dropped a general curtsy, "he'd speak out plain, he would, and his dear wife would be the last to blame him. For if ever a woman lived as knowed not what it was to form a wish, to pison him as had good looks, and had no reagent give her by the best of husbands, Mrs. Harris is that evenly disposition." Apostrophe, apostrophe, with these words the worthy woman, who appeared to have dropped in to take tea as a delicate little attention, rather than to have any engagement on the premises, in an official capacity, crossed to Mr. Chuffey, who was seated in the same corner as of old, and shook him by the shoulder. "Rouse yourself, and look up. Come," apostrophe said Mrs. Gamp. "Here's company, Mr. Chuffey." Apostrophe, "I am sorry for it," apostrophe cried the old man, looking humbly round the room. "I know I'm in the way. I ask pardon, but I've nowhere else to go to. Where is she?" Apostrophe, "Mary went to him." "Ah." Apostrophe, apostrophe said the old man, patting her on the cheek. "Here she is. Here she is. She's never hard on poor old Chuffy. Poor old Chuff." Apostrophe, as she took her seat upon a low chair by the old man's side, and put herself within the reach of his hand, she looked up once at Tom. It was a sad look that she cast upon him, though there was a faint smile trembling on her face. It was a speaking look, and Tom knew what it said. "You see how misery has changed me. I can feel for a dependent now, and set some value on his attachment." Apostrophe, I. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Chuffy in a soothing tone. I. Never mind him. It's hard to hear, but never mind him. He'll die one day. There are 365 days in the year, 366 in leap year, and he may die on any one of them. Apostrophe, you're a wearing old soul, and that's the sacred truth, apostrophe said Mrs. Gamp, contemplating him from a little distance with anything but favor, as he continued to mutter to himself. "It's a pity that you don't know what you say, for you'd tire your own patience out if you did, and fret yourself into a happy release for all as knows you." Apostrophe, his son, apostrophe murmured the old man, lifting up his hand. His son. Apostrophe, well, I'm sure. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mrs. Gamp, you're a settling of it, Mr. Chuffy. To your satisfaction, sir, I hope. But I wouldn't lay a new pincushion on it myself, sir, though you are so well informed. Drat the old creature, he's a laying down the law tolerable confident to. A deal he knows of sons. Or daughters either. Suppose you was to favor us with some remarks on twins, sir, would you be so good? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the bitter and indignant sarcasm which Mrs. Gamp conveyed into these taunts was altogether lost on the unconscious Chuffy, who appeared to be as little cognizant of their delivery as of his having given Mrs. Gamp offense. But that high-minded woman being sensitively alive to any invasion of her professional province, and imagining that Mr. Chuffey had given utterance to some prediction on the subject of sons, which ought to have emanated in the first instance from herself as the only lawful authority, or which should at least have been on no account proclaimed without her sanction and concurrence, was not so easily appeased. She continued to sidle at Mr. Chuffey with looks of sharp hostility, and to defy him with many other ironical remarks, uttered in that low key which commonly denotes suppressed indignation, until the entrance of the tea board, and a request from Mrs. Jonas, that she would make tea at a side table for the party, that had unexpectedly assembled, restored her to herself. She smiled again, and entered on her ministration with her own particular urbanity. "And quite a family it is to make tea for," apostrophe said Mrs. Gamp, "and what a happiness to do it. My good young woman to the servant girl, perhaps somebody would like to try a new laid egg or two, not piled too hard. Likewise, a few rounds o' buttered toast, first cutting off the crust, in consequence of tender teeth, and not too many of 'em, which Gamp himself, Mrs. Chuzzlewit, at one blow, being in liquor, struck out for, two single, and two double, as was took by Mrs. Harris for a keepsake, and is carried in her pocket at this present hour, along with two crampones, a bit o' ginger, and a grater like a blessed infant's shoe, in tin, with a little heel, to put the nutmeg in. As many times I've seen and said, and used for candle when required, within the month." Apostrophe, as the privileges of the side table besides including the small prerogatives of sitting next the toast, and taking two cups of tea to other people's one, and always taking them at a crisis, that is to say, before putting fresh water into the teapot, and after it had been standing for some time, also comprehended a full view of the company, and an opportunity of addressing them, as from a rostrum, Mrs. Gamp discharged the functions entrusted to her with extreme good humor and affability. Sometimes resting her saucer on the palm of her outspread hand, and supporting her elbow on the table, she stopped between her sips of tea, to favor the circle with a smile, a wink, a roll of the head, or some other mark of notice, and at those periods her countenance was lighted up with a degree of intelligence and vivacity, which it was almost impossible to separate from the benignant influence of distilled waters. But for Mrs. Gamp, it would have been a curiously silent party. Miss Pecksniff only spoke to her Augustus, and to him in whispers. Augustus spoke to nobody, but sighed for everyone, and occasionally gave himself such a sounding slap upon the forehead as would make Mrs. Todgers, who was rather nervous, start in her chair with an involuntary exclamation. Mrs. Todgers was occupied in knitting, and seldom spoke. Poor Mary held the hand of cheerful little Ruth between her own, and listening with evident pleasure to all she said, but rarely speaking herself, sometimes smiled, and sometimes kissed her on the cheek, and sometimes turned aside to hide the tears that trembled in her eyes. Tom felt this change in her so much, and was so glad to see how tenderly Ruth dealt with her, and how she knew and answered to it, that he had not the heart to make any movement towards their departure, although he had long since given utterance to all he came to say. The old clerk, subsiding into his usual state, remained profoundly silent, while the rest of the little assembly were thus occupied, intent upon the dreams, whatever they might be, which hardly seemed to stir the surface of his sluggish thoughts. The bent of these dull fancies combining probably with the silent feasting that was going on about him, and some struggling recollection of the last approach to revelry he had witnessed, suggested a strange question to his mind. He looked round upon a sudden, and said, "Who's lying dead upstairs?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "No one," apostrophe said Mary, turning to him. "What is the matter? We are all here." Apostrophe, "All here." Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the old man. "All here. Where is he then, my old master, Mr. Chuzzlewit, who but the only son? Where is he?" Apostrophe, "Hush. Hush." apostrophe said Mary, speaking kindly to him. That happened long ago. Don't you recollect? Apostrophe, recollect. Apostrophe, apostrophe, rejoined the old man, with a cry of grief. As if I could forget. As if I ever could forget. Apostrophe, he put his hand up to his face for a moment, and then repeated turning round exactly as before. Who's lying dead upstairs? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no one. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mary. At first he gazed angrily upon her, as upon a stranger who endeavored to deceive him, but peering into her face, and seeing that it was indeed she, he shook his head in sorrowful compassion. You think not. But they don't tell you. No, no, poor thing. They don't tell you. Who are these, and why are they merry-making here, if there is no one dead? Foul play. Go see who it is. Apostrophe, she made a sign to them, not to speak to him, which indeed they had little inclination to do, and remained silent herself. So did he for a short time, but then he repeated the same question with an eagerness that had a peculiar terror in it. There's someone dead, apostrophe, he said, or dying, and I want to know who it is. Go see, go see. Where's Jonas? Apostrophe, in the country, apostrophe, she replied. The old man gazed at her, as if he doubted what she said, or had not heard her, and, rising from his chair, walked across the room and upstairs, whispering as he went, foul play. Apostrophe, apostrophe, they heard his footsteps overhead, going up into that corner of the room in which the bed stood. It was there old Anthony had died, and then they heard him coming down again immediately. His fancy was not so strong or wild that it pictured to him anything in the deserted bedchamber which was not there, for he returned much calmer, and appeared to have satisfied himself. They don't tell you, apostrophe, he said to Mary in his quavering voice, as he sat down again, and patted her upon the head. They don't tell me either, but I'll watch, I'll watch. They shall not hurt you, don't be frightened. When you have sat up watching, I have sat up watching too. I have. Apostrophe, he piped out, clenching his weak, shriveled hand. Many a night I have been ready. Apostrophe, he said this with such trembling gaps and pauses in his want of breath, and said it in his jealous secrecy so closely in her ear, that little or nothing of it was understood by the visitors. But they had heard and seen enough of the old man to be disquieted, and to have left their seats and gathered about him, thereby affording Mrs. Gamp, whose professional coolness was not so easily disturbed, an eligible opportunity for concentrating the whole resources of her powerful mind and appetite upon the toast and butter, tea and eggs. She had brought them to bear upon those viands with such vigor that her face was in the highest state of inflammation, when she now, there being nothing left to eat or drink, saw fit to interpose. Why, hidey tidy, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mrs. Gamp, is these your manners? You want a pitcher of cold water, throw it over you to bring you round, that's my belief, and if you was under Betsy Prigg you'd have it too, I do assure you, Mr. Chuffy. Spanish flies is the only thing to draw this nonsense out of you, and if anybody wanted to do you a kindness, they'd clap a blister of 'em on your head, and put a mustard poultice on your back. Who's dead, indeed. It wouldn't be no grievous loss, if someone was, I think. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he's quiet now, Mrs. Gamp, apostrophe, said Mary. Don't disturb him. Apostrophe, oh, bother the old victim, Mrs. Chuzzlewit, apostrophe, replied that zealous lady, I ain't no patience with him. You give him his own way too much by half. A worritin' wexageous creeter. Apostrophe, no doubt with the view of carrying out the precepts she enforced, and bothering the old victim in practice as well as in theory, Mrs. Gamp took him by the collar of his coat, and gave him some dozen or two of hearty shakes backward and forward in his chair, that exercise being considered by the disciples of the Greek school of nursing, who are very numerous among professional ladies, as exceedingly conducive to repose, and highly beneficial to the performance of the nervous functions. Its effect in this instance was to render the patient so giddy and addle-headed that he could. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.